Kamahi Jordan King wears a few hats. He's been painting for most of his life and even worked alongside the late Shane Pickett. This year, Kamahi won the award for work on paper at the Victorian Indigenous Art Awards with an image of Constantina Bush, movie poster style, entitled Attack of the 50-Foot Black Gin. But Kamahi was born to perform. He trained as an actor with the Aboriginal Centre for Performing Arts in Brisbane, and a few serious roles came his way. But it's his comic invention, Constantina Bush, who's found a wide audience. No one really knows how old she is, and it's not polite to ask. But in heels, she stands over 6 foot. When the intervention swept through the Northern Territory, she hitched a ride with some girls on a crumping tour of the outback, who now back her up on stage as the Bushettes. Along the way, she hooked up with a Norforce soldier, but we have to assume that ended badly, because her next stop was Melbourne, where she auditioned as herself. Constantina is not shy, but today her cousin brother, Kamahi Jordan King, is with me in the studio. Kamahi's lived all over the country, but now he's based permanently in Melbourne. I started by asking Kamahi where he came up with the name Constantina Bush.
I lived with Freeman at the time, you know, Catherine Freeman, big runner, and she was invited to this luncheon, and she took me along, and we had all these name badges made up that were there, and it was so high security that we didn't know where we were going. Even the driver didn't know. He was just following some kind of satellite thing that was telling him where to go. And I said, oh, who are we going to meet? And she's like, Condoleezza Rice. She's the US Secretary of State. And, you know, she's telling me all about her. And I was trying to remember her name. And US Secretary of State, okay, she's something to do with the politics over there. And got to meet her, and we were talking to her and that. And then there was this guy in the audience, his name was Luke Darcy, like really tall and good looking, and I was looking over at him and making hand signals like, you know, who are you? Who are you? And he didn't understand what I was doing, you know, not being a black fella, so he called me over and I went over to him and I excused myself from Condoleezza and Catherine, and what I didn't realise was that he was standing in a line that was waiting to meet her, and he was only three people back from where we were, and I walked over and I was talking to him. I said, oh, who are you? What are you doing? He goes, I'm Luke Darcy. I'm captain of the Bulldogs. And I go, oh, yeah, AFL or rugby? And he goes, AFL. And I said, oh, I had a friend who used to play AFL. His name's Chris Groom. And he goes, oh, I know Groom. You haven't seen him for ages. And I said, well, I've got his number. Do you want me to give him a quick call? And he said, yeah, yeah. So I did. I said, got a blast from the past for you. And I passed him the phone to Luke. And Luke was talking to Chris for a while. But then what was happening while he was talking, I was looking, you know, in his direction, and Condoleezza was behind me, and apparently Catherine had left and already gone, and she was making her way back down the line again, and she was standing right behind me, and he goes, oh, I've got to go, because she was just about to say goodbye to this person and start talking to Luke, and he goes, I'll put you back to your friend, and he gives me the phone, and just as they're changing over, I'm like, oh, yeah, what's that? Oh, look, we're at some bloody luncheon, I don't know, you know, for that UN ambassador, Constantina Bush. And Luke went red, like bright red, and sort of looked down and didn't know how to look at me. And I turned around, and right by my side here, just behind me, was Condoleezza Rice looking at me like, yeah, the UN ambassador, Constantina Bush. And I just thought that story was so funny that when I had the opportunity to perform with Out Black down here, which is like a GLBTIQ and Sister Girls Group Support Network that put on performances through NAIDOC, and that, and when they said, well, what's your character called? I just remembered that story and I thought, Constantina Bush. Absolutely Constantina Bush.
What did Condoleezza do? I mean, she was obviously within, she would have been within earshot.
Way within earshot. She gave me this look, like she looked at me. It was a look like, I really can't be bothered to deal with this, so I'm just going to let this fly over my head. And then she just looked away, but with her eyes, and then her head followed later. So it was like one of those real sarcastic, you know, gestures, I guess you could call it. But it was funny.
Go back, because I want to talk about Kamahi and, you know, where you grew up and what life was like as a kid.
I grew up in a big family. The first place I can actually remember is in Catherine, and it was just behind the town of Catherine. My grandfather had this big block. Then the next thing I remember, we were always out bush. Dad was a grader operator on dirt roads, and, you know, the dirt roads that service the communities, he used to go along and smooth the road out after the wet season, and we were always in this big, big silver caravan and in the middle of nowhere, so neither here nor there, not in the community or in the town, we were just in the middle of the bush. and growing up had to make my own entertainment, I guess, and drew a lot of inspiration from nature and what was around me at the time. Like, I didn't like snakes and only grew a fear of them when I got bitten by a python. Like, it was just a python, wasn't poisonous, but when I was younger, I used to actually grab them by the tail and muck around with them out bush, and poisonous ones too, not knowing. They never bit me, but the python did. And that's when I grew a fear, like, because it was so fast and there was nothing I could do about it. And I realised that, you know, if a poisonous one did that to me, I'd be gone. Because we were out in the bush, there was no... I mean, we could have got the flying doctors in, but knowing Daddy would have said, Sam's, you're right, you bastard. But he was pretty good. And I had older brothers and that were mainly in town for school, because after a certain age, we had to go to school. And so we ended up going into town, and Mum and Dad bought a house in Pierce Street, which was just behind the town again, so quite close. And we still own that house. We always had family coming and staying, and I just remember growing up and being Indigenous. It's a part of your growing up, I think. And you learn to love and respect your family. You just learn where your place is, and in doing so, it's, for me, it's better because you've got this extended network. And even now, like, I was living in Adelaide as an adult, and my uncle came down and visited me with his daughter, her kids, and his wife, and, you know, couple of his other kids, and that I had a two-bedroom house at the time, but yeah, it was like, yeah, come in, sure, you know, stay for a week or two or whatever. And yeah, so that was the sort of life that I had. But after 12, went to boarding school in Adelaide, and finished year 12 when I was 15, going on 16, and worked for the government for a while. And then in 1993, I moved back to Katherine, and I was working for the Australian Electoral Commission. And I went to Darwin for the weekend, and I said to my boss, I said, look, I'm going to Darwin for the weekend. I'll be back on Monday and on Sunday. And he goes, oh, yeah, enjoy. And I rang him from Perth on Monday morning and said that I wasn't coming into work. And he goes, where are you? And I said, Perth. And I said, can you write me a reference? And he did, and he wrote a really good one. And, yeah, so I ended up staying in Perth. I started work at an Aboriginal art gallery working with the late Shane Pickett. He was the artist in resident, and he, on our, you know, slower periods in the shop, he used to teach me how to blend colours and paint and stuff. And I was there for about a year working, and Jada Milroy came in and started working there as well. Like, it's the same thing. I got wind from my uncle Mike Crawshaw about the Aboriginal Music Theatre Training Program, and they were looking for people, and he'd heard me singing in the shower, and he goes, why don't you just go for it, you know? You're so outgoing, you should do this. And I thought about it and said, yeah, I'll give it a shot. And I went and told Jada about it, Jada, and she goes, well, I'm going to come and audition too. And I was like, oh, you know, this is my thing now. But we both auditioned and we both got in, and it's so funny now because we – like, you look, that was 94. I don't even know how many years ago that was, probably 18 or something. Yeah.
So that was at WAPA?
No, not at WAPA. It was an introduction to performing arts run by Michael Leslie and the Aboriginal Music Theatre Training Program. And it was not auspiced, but it was supported by Black Swan. So we were basically getting trained for things that would be coming up with them in the future. And we put on a musical at the end of the year, and I ended up playing the lead role in that, and Lynette Lewis as well. And it was like a musical style of Romeo and Juliet.
Then how did you get from Perth to Melbourne? This is where I met you.
From Perth, I could sing. I knew I could sing, but I didn't really have the acting skills, and I sort of got panned a bit with that lead role. So I wanted to go off and do acting skills, but then there was the opportunity to work in musicals. So I thought dancing and acting, you know, I needed those two. So I went off to Sydney and auditioned for ACPA, NAISDA, and got in. But I asked them at the start whether I could have acting lessons, and Julie Doyle, I think it was at the time, student coordinator, said, yes, yes, we can give you acting lessons. And these were like one-on-one lessons. They weren't that many, and I really wanted, from what I learnt there and at the Aboriginal Music Theatre Training Program, I decided I wanted to be an actor more than just a musical person, so I took it more seriously. Stayed at NAISDA for 2 years to get a bit of skills up, and was going to be there for the third year, but then the acting course came up with ACPA, which was the new version of the Aboriginal Music Theatre Training Program, because so we, the 6-month course that we did was like the building blocks for the course. And then Michael wrote it properly, Michael Leslie, and he got it approved to be VTEC registered. So it was the same sort of courses that people do at WAPA and NIDA and that. And
fully accredited.
Yeah, fully accredited. And I just thought, no, I've got to do this. This is what I want. This is where my heart lies. So I did that and I moved to Brisbane. And then after I finished the course, I graduated. But while I was still a student, I got two professional gigs. One is Tibbleton, Romeo and Juliet. And it was really freaky, actually, because when I got that role, it was my last year at school. And all the other students were complaining because what happened was while I was in that role, Wesley Enoch saw me or someone saw me and told me that I should audition for the Sunshine Club. Which I did, and I got into that as well. So in my last year, I was touring around with this show all around Queensland and that in a musical and, you know, everything I'd trained for. And then when I graduated from ACPA, I ended up going over to London and going back and staying there for a year or two and working with a theatre company over there called Fireraisers, just writing plays and acting in some of theirs that they wrote. And, yeah, it was really good, and it really opened my eyes. Because growing up, you know, like in the bushnet, you have a sense of innocence, and it's not a sense of innocence. You just know your simple surroundings, and you make do with that. But then, going over to somewhere like London and hearing, you know, this is where the Queen lives and things like that, I was just expecting skyscrapers and everything, and it's just a big town, like just big and flat and spread out everywhere. Like every single little bit of land is used. I'm sure, like, they're itching to build on their parks and that. But, but yeah, so I stayed there for a while, and then I came back to Adelaide. By that stage, my brother had started up King Studios, which was for us as artists, because I always painted, like, I must say, from this whole time, and the only time I considered myself to be an artist was when I sold my first piece in Perth, and that was back in 94, a long time ago, like, I know, it was actually when I was 18, and it was before Perth, it was Darwin, sorry. But it was like, it wasn't the sort of stuff that I do now, like after working with Shane and, you know, just getting inspiration from people like Peggy Patrick and Gloria, I've changed my style completely, and it reflects me and my experiences growing up, everything I paint does.
How did Melbourne come in? Because you're living here now. We're living here.
Melbourne came about, okay. So I went back to Adelaide and my brother started up the King Studios and that, and we used to come down here to sell paintings to galleries and distributors and things like that. And I got a chance to look around and I kind of fell in love with the city because everywhere I turned there was something beautiful and something arty, and it's not just in the architecture or the way the town is laid out. It's actually the people. The people are really friendly. And people have a beautiful sense of fashion here during winter. See what I'm wearing today? No, but it's a really beautiful town, and something about it just called out to me. And I'd never lived here. I'd lived in every capital city, but I just thought I had to move down. And I ended up realizing that I had a whole heap of friends throughout, you know, the years that I'd spent in performing arts schools, working in the industry. There were so many people here that I already knew. So I had a little community here, and then I just thought, okay, well, I've got to slot myself in there. So it took 2 years, and a friend of mine, Nikki Ashby, and her friend Candice Monique decided to move down. And by that stage, I'd already been coming down, and Nikki and I used to come across for weekend trips and things like that. And when she moved down, I'd come and stay with her for the weekend and just look around, and then ended up finding someone suitable here and then thinking, no, I've got to move down. And I moved down, and the first place I lived with was with Catherine, and I stayed there for about 3 years, I think, 2-3 years. And then she ended up finding James and getting married and had to get another place. And so they sold that place. I think they moved out somewhere out to, like, the past Geelong, Orange Grove or something. And so I ended up getting another place and then just living and staying here, and I've been here ever since, and that was, like, 7 years ago. So, and I do consider Melbourne to be my home now, and, you know, like the awards, the Indigenous Art Awards just recently, I was a winner in one of the categories, and that to me just, you know, that's it's more to win that because it means acceptance by the Victorian Indigenous community as part of the community. And I feel really honoured and privileged. So this is my home. I don't think I'll be going anywhere for a while.
And the winner of this year's Power Victorian Indigenous Art Award for Works on Paper is awarded to a compelling, humorous and punchy, high-impact work oozing with confidence. The winner of the Power Victorian Indigenous Art Award for Works on Paper is Attack of the 50-foot Black Paper.
Now, Constantina Bush, I mean, you've told us how, you know, this, you know, performing arts has always been something that you've worked through and you've worked hard to get to, you know, a place. But how did Constantina Bush kind of evolve?
What happened was there's a show down here, Out Black, that we just performed last week, actually, last Friday. But Out Black had an opportunity because somebody pulled out and... Brian Andy, my next door neighbour, who had he's the convener of Out Black now, but at the time he was just organising things, and he goes, "Oh, one of the drag queens has pulled out. Have you ever done drag before?" And I said, "Nah, but I'll do it. It's easy. It's just miming, you know." And thinking it was going to be easy, and he goes, "Yeah, well, you'll have to audition." And I did. I went and did a song for him, and he said that was terrible because, you know, miming the art of drag. There is an art of drag, and it's too hard for me. So I thought, well, what if I just sing live? And he said, "Well, if you can," and I did, and people started wanting more. She just took off, and then at that stage, that first performance, I was talking like this. I didn't, you know, it was just Kamahi dressed up in a dress, and even though I had the name Constantina Bush, I didn't really have the character outlined. And after he said, "Oh, you got to come back and sing in the second one," I said, "Like, oh, yeah, okay." So I did, and this time I thought I'd better start creating a character for her. And I just remembered growing up, you know, like growing up in the bush in Catherine and around there, and how people talk, and up Catherine Way, you know, we've got my way of talking, so we talk like that now. So we've been mixing about English, got a language a little bit, and talk fast way, you know, and everybody understands it up there. So Constantina Bush had to be one of these women. And I decided to make her a real female character rather than being a drag queen because, you know, I might offend people by going around saying I'm a drag queen and do terrible miming. But singing live is a different aspect of it, and it gives her a lot to play with as well, because what she can do is take popular songs at the time and change the lyrics around and sing it in a mild way that just people can relate to, and people love it. So she was developed on my aunties, on my cousins, on people I know, on people I think that are funny. And then Ilbidgery gave us an opportunity to perform at the Spiegel tent. They had the Vipers there. And
the Victorian Indigenous Performing Arts.
Yeah. And I was like, "Oh, okay, yeah, we've got to do something." And I said, "Nikki, you, let's do this." And Nikki and her sister come along as backup dancers, and we did this Kelly Rowland work, and I sang "My Baby Just Cares For Me" by Nina Simone.
My baby don't care for shows. My baby don't care for clothes. My baby just cares for me.
But this one jackaroo, I've been looking at him. Nice one, good boy, good looking fella, I tell you. Even a good arm. Nice broad back, even broader than mine, you look.
It is kind of like my life story, really. Because I do come from that kind of simple life where things in the city just amaze me.
Like when you grow up where Ivan come from, everything's simple. Everything. I couldn't get out of how many different kind of car everywhere. I've been just look Toyota Land Cruiser. And I'm a little bit back home, biggest mob, everybody drive them. Troop carrier kind, you know? And then I've been come to a city, I've been look car nearly smaller than me.
I actually got interviewed by ABC the other day, and he said to me, "Do you realize that your show is very political for white people?" I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, you're taking the piss out of Aboriginal people. You're making fun." I said, "No, I'm not. That's how we are back home. That's exactly how we speak. So what I'm doing is educating you, not shocking you or, you know, taking the mickey out of our people."
My baby don't care for shows. He don't even care for clothes. He won't buy a naked one.
he cares for me.
I have to have the girls in the show, like, they have to be there because they kind of make it, they give it that high energy thing, whereas with Constantino, because I prefer to sing live rather than mime to recorded music, even if it is my own voice, I could do that, I guess, you know, record myself singing and then mime to it and dance, and then I could, you know, funk it up. But when I'm singing live, obviously, I can't move around that much. I need to concentrate on the singing so it sounds good. And the girls do the dancing and they're just right behind me. And Constantina's really cheeky, you know, like she'll tell the girls they're not allowed to come in front of her on the stage. And she'll do that while we're performing too. It's like
she sometimes sabotages the girls.
Yeah, of course. Especially if they look like they're going to show her up. But yeah. Even her material, you know, it's well selected. I think about Indigenous issues at the time. Like, I think when we first started out, it was the intervention. And I make light of those issues. Like, you know, they are serious issues, but some good things have come out of it. And even the half the basic card, the payment, like a lot of people down here think it's unfair of the government to hold the money for the communities, you know, like how dare they or whatever, or give them this card where they can't buy cigarettes and stuff like that on. But they can actually save up on the basic card so they can tally up and then go there and say, here, I've got $1,000 on this, I want that fridge and that washing machine. And they have been doing that. And they actually, the community, a lot of people in the community, at Miller Carpety we were there, and they like it. They like the basic card. So, you know, and when the option was, the option came in because people were screaming up about it to take it away. And they made it, what do you call it? Like, it was a choice.
Optional.
Yeah, so, and a lot of people stayed with the basic card because they liked it. They liked it. It was a way of saving money.
I remember one performance I saw, and it was the year of the intervention, or very close to when the intervention was first rolled out, and you were making a joke about all the troops going, North Force and all the, you know, how Constantina was checking out all them, you know, truckloads of military personnel.
Yeah, she picks up with somebody called Eric. And
Of course.
It was the premise for the Little Mermaid song. And she wanted to get away from the, you know, like I think you put it in the last show you had where I was featured with Patrick interviewing me, escape from a dusty cattle station, chasing the bright lights of the city and looking for love. And like it really, really, you know, that explains it in a nutshell. But all the comedy and humour and like the way I use her, because she's also, like, I'm at RMIT at the moment and I'm studying, researching for my Master of Arts in Media and Communication, and using Constantina Bush as the vehicle to challenge the politically correct arena, because I think when people are aware that they need to be politically correct, they come across as quite patronising and it's annoying, whereas if you are politically correct, you don't go out of your way to show that you are, you just are and you do, and then it's not an issue. But to try and, you know, like, and it's funny because I have a couple of Asian friends and they get the same. I had a Asian friend when I was at school, like, you know, we as black fellas, people say that to us as well, and it's like, do you really? And there's so many similarities, like, and then I started realizing we're not the only ones out there that get this. So it's like and also about Constantina Bush, like planting the seeds for the topics and the Indigenous issues that are quite taboo. I'll go there, but I'll go there in a sense where it's not giving anybody a guilt trip about it. It's just making people think. So I'll talk about it in such a way that it just plants a seed with comedy, and then people go away and they've got this little seed in their head about that issue, and it grows and they're thinking about it. And then I have people write on her wall later on, I really enjoyed your show and thought it was so funny, but my God, I'm only just realizing now how political it is. You're so clever, rah, 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 whatever. It's like, well, she is. But and she really takes over. Like, honestly, like, you know, in acting school and people used to say things like, oh, I really didn't feel like me. I was the character. It's like, oh, yeah, whatever. But she does. She just gets up and she does things. She gives me license to be a bit more daring. And, like, to be honest with you, some of the stuff that I've done on stage as Constantina Bush, I would just never do in real life. I wouldn't even dream of it. Like, she's really cheeky. Like, there was a time when she performed at Gasworks and this lady ran out and jumped up on stage with her and she's like, who are you? And, oh, I'm the interpreter for the deaf people. And I'm like, where's the deaf people? And she goes, I said, I can do sign language. Hold this, and gave her the microphone. And then Constantina does, you know, me, you, and makes a sexual sign at the back, and it just turned that deaf guy into a celebrity. Like at the interval, everyone was around him, you know, talking up, and he's really happy. He gives me this wave, like,
"You're gonna give me lift or what?
Where are you going?
Anywhere but here.
Sure, get in.
You can say yes. Where are you? Breakfast. Oh, too small your car.
You right?
I tell you, I gotta leave this place. I'm gonna live in the city.
Going to the big smoke, eh?
No, nothing I don't smoke.
I mean the city. The big smoke.
Oh, true. Yeah, well, that's where I'm gonna go. I'm gonna live in Melbourne. Where do you live?
I live in Melbourne.
Yeah, that's where I'm going now.
How much of Kamahi is in Constantine? I mean, I know with the writing that you're talking about a lot of issues, and Constantine is the vehicle to talk.
There's a lot, actually. Like, even with me, like, I remember going to Adelaide for the first time, and in the mall there were, like, escalators, and running up and down those escalators and, you know, like, just being amazed at this set of stairs that was moving. And going up and down elevators as well. And in the mall, they had these glass ones. And that sort of stuff was just amazing, even automatic doors. So, like, I lived a really simple life. And my brother and mob used to laugh at me because I was 15 years old, but I used to love playgrounds because the parks in Katherine were, like, you know, not really suitable for kids. And when I went to Adelaide, they had big things made up for kids, and it was all free, you know, like, whereas entertainment as a kid in Katherine, you'd had to go to the show and pay $1.50 to get on the Hurricane or something like that, and that's all the entertainment we had. But here were these parks with these big slides, and they were free, and my brother, recognising that in me, like, I still had that childish thing, that childish nature, he took me out to this place called Monash where they had these really, really big, huge slides made by this one guy, and he opened it up to the public, and yeah, it was really enjoyable, you know, like, and kind of, I didn't start growing up, like, becoming an adult until I was about 20, I reckon.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, fresh from their tour from Lajamang, Jilkmingin, Galawinku and Milankimpi in the Northern Territory, it's Miss Constantina Bush and the Bushettes.
It's a dream!
How do you characterise Constantina? How do you characterise what you do with her? Is it female impersonation? Is it can it be considered a form of cabaret drag, or what are the terms that you use to describe it?
I like to think of her as being a real female, and she does too. Like, she's a straight black chick from the Northern Territory, just, you know, thinks she's really classy, and just because she got away from a little cattle station and has a very strong opinion of the world. But as the performance goes, as far as the performance goes, I think people will see me as a drag queen because I'm a man dressing up as a woman. What I'm trying to aim for is like the Barry Humphries, you know, like how he's got Dame Edna, and she's, you know, like, I grew up thinking she was a woman. She was on covers of my mum's magazine, for Christ's sake. So, and I really thought she was a woman, like this funny old woman. Who is she? And people love her, like, you know, an old fuddy-duddy with pink hair from Moonee Ponds or Moonee Valley or wherever she, you know, based her character. But that's what I aim for. But people are generally going to think, okay, it's a drag show or whatever. That's why, another reason I have the two girls, the Bushettes. And I didn't even think about getting two guys to do it, because then it kind of falls into that gay side. Because really, in the show, there was no mention ever of Constantina Bush being a man in woman's clothing. Mm. So there's one part in the old show that I took the dreaming where the girl goes, how can she be pregnant? Don't you know she's really... And then Constantina goes, oi! Like, real blokey, don't make me come in
don't
there.
Don't blow my cover.
Yeah, yeah. And then Gammon stands up real sexy way to the audience again, like a little lady. But that's the only thing I had in the show that did that. And I even had people, like, because, by the way, I was quite skinny at the first Dreaming Festival. So the fact that I was really, really clever at tucking and had these boobs, I had friends of mine from Sydney from 10 years ago or whatever, thinking, that bastard's gone and got a sex change, you know? And they thought my boobs were real and everything until I pulled them out on the last night and threw them into the crowd. but I had everything in that show, like, so I reckon what people will see is, like, I drag act, and people are doing this all the time, and everybody is spelling my name wrong. They spell Kamahi Jordan King like Kamahi Jordan with an A. So it's not like spelt like that. So I have to Google two things, you know, and to look for something like a review or something like that, and it's always on the A. And then every time somebody writes up about it, Indigenous drag performer, Kamahi Jordan King, Kamahi Jordan King. I suppose there's not many Indigenous drag queens down here, really, you know, that are doing work. And the thing is, too, is that one of the reasons I don't take up the offers to perform in pubs and clubs is because I would fall into that category too fast. And I don't want to. I think Constantina's, she's built for the stage. The show is made to reach a vast majority of different audience members through festivals. At the Dreaming Festival, I think, like, you know, that was good because she's reaching all the other Indigenous mob. And from that, what's happened is I've got a lot of people trying to contact me on Facebook saying, would you come to Broome if we you know, and I write, yes, we would, absolutely. And for community things and that, we try to keep the price right down. But there are five of us that have to travel with the show. And the whole idea for her, like, of course she started out with Outblack, which was like a drag queen thing, but at that stage I didn't have that character for her, I just had the name. And I pretty much got up on stage speaking like I speak now, and then I thought, I've got to base her on people that I know, and, like, you know, where does she come from? And I had to give her this background, just like studying for a role and giving your character memories and things like that. And then I came up with this Christian based, you know, because, like, in the community, seriously, a lot of our kids walk around there with biblical names, and like, it's really silly because it's so funny because a lot of us have attached to that Christian way. Like, even when I was growing up, I come from a very strict Christian family, and we were told, you know, like, all the rules, all the laws, like, don't eat anything that crawls on the bottom of the sea, anything with a split hoof, that, like, to that extent, and a man shall not lie with another man, and rah, rah, rah. And I was like, okay, I'm going to hell then, you know. And even my mum, when I first came out to her, that's what she said to me, you know, you're going to go to hell. And she has not stopped loving me, though, and I'm still her favourite kid. And, yeah, like, she's in hospital now, by the way, so I might just shout out to her and tell her, I know she's going to get better. She'll probably be there listening to me on this. And but she loves me nonetheless. And
and she's proud of you too, isn't she?
Well, she is now. It's only the thing is, like, Constantina Bush, the impact that this character has had on my life, I really have to say it's amazing. Like, I have been an actor for a long time. Like, I graduated in 2000 from the Aboriginal Centre for Performing Arts, and I majored in acting and minored in singing. And, you know, I've been doing things here and there, acted in this little American series called The Lost World with these American actors and some Australian mob gammon with American accents and that. And I got killed off in season two, Johnson, my character was, and I was a hunter. And in that episode, that particular episode, I had no lines. Like, my lines got cut, thrown on the cutting floor. I did have lines, but they got thrown out. And yeah, it was really funny because I was gammon. Like, I got the episode and showed my family, and then I was like, hey, they took my lines out, same job, you know. But things like that, and then I've been around for a while doing this, and then visual art as well. And then the minute Constantina Bush comes into my life and I get an award for her show as an actor, and then last year, or was it this year? This year, I took out the best work on paper for a big poster that I did of her called Attack of the 50-Foot Black Gin. So I've been painting for even longer than I've been acting, and I win an award now, but it all comes back to her. And the thing is, I've been gay for a long time to my mum, and she has not approved of my lifestyle. She didn't like it. She doesn't talk about it. She didn't. And then when she found out that I was doing Constantina Bush, what I think came into her mind was that I was living life as a woman in Melbourne, going out dressed up like a girl all the time. I don't think she realised it was a show. And she didn't want to even look at the Facebook pictures or anything like that. My sister was trying to show her, and she's like, Mum, have a look at this. It's funny or whatever. And she just wouldn't. And then Monday she was sitting down watching NITV, and a documentary come up. No. It was Daniel King's little documentary he made of me on NITV, and she's laughing, you know. She realised, oh, okay, it's a character, because in that particular show that he did, Kamahi talks, me, and then Constantina Bush you know, talks about him, and they talk about each other like rubbishing each other like they live together. And it's really funny. But then on the NITV one, the Foxtel one come up, and people started seeing it, and they really did a good job of showing her off and showing me off as an artist, and sort of become famous on the little, I don't know, Foxtel scene, I guess. People recognise me in the street now and come up talking to me. Are you an artist? Do you do... that's so funny. Where's your show? And as confident as I am when I'm out in public, and that I like to be... I like my personal space, and I like to be... I don't deal well with attention like that. Like, even though I'm up on stage doing what I do, I think when I'm up there, like, it's like...
Okay, a different guy.
It is different, and you feel safe behind that... there's a wall there, you know, for me, and I feel safe behind it. Like, people can look at me through a glass case, and that's what it feels like. But to be out in public now, I'm vulnerable. So after all of my shows, it's not rare for us to just get changed straight away so I can slip back into that, you know, and get, like, and a lot of people want to hang around and get photos and that, but, yeah, I just can't do it because I've never been good with crowds. And that probably sounds strange to you because you know me, but no, seriously, I am.
You might want to perform for them, but you don't necessarily want them, you know, in the same room, or you don't want to have to negotiate with them or talk to them.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, with Constantina Bush, she's kind of brought my mother and I quite close, like the whole fame thing. So like people, I saw your son on... Ozstar, it's called up there. And she's like, yeah, it's good, hey, it's funny again. Like, you know, and she's accepting of it now. And it's amazing. Like, this character's opened a lot of doors for me. People that, like, it's so weird. Like, when people find out, like, Brandon, my friend, and I were out the other night, and these people were standing there talking, and they were going, oh, we're going to go and see that Constantina Bush perform, blah, blah, blah. And they're talking to us, and Brandon goes, that's her right there. That's Constantina Bush there, you know. And they're like, oh my God. And they were sort of kind of ignoring me at the start. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, we've seen you before. And so she gets recognized more than me. But she's changed my life dramatically, like really dramatically. I posted on Facebook, I think I'm looking at new horizons where I just didn't think I'd be reaching for before. Like, they were way beyond the horizon that I saw myself reaching at this age anyway. And she's just opened so many doors for me, and I really don't know what to do with her now. Like, she, I think I might just let her choose and pick her own little future.
Just ask Constantina what she wants to do today. Kamahi Jordan King, a.k.a. Constantina Bush, but I know you as Kamahi. It's great to have you in the studio, and again, it won't be the last time.
No worries, Daniel. Thank you. It's great to be here.
The multi-talented Kamahi Jordan King, and we were speaking about his comic invention, Constantina Bush, and a few other things besides. And I'd like to thank the producers of the Foxtel series, Who We Are, for permission to use some of the live stage recordings of Constantina Bush. And Constantina Bush is on stage at the moment in the Burlesque Hour Loves Melbourne at 45 Downstairs, which is on Flinders Lane in the city, from the 4th to the 7th of August. For now, that's all we have time for. I'm Daniel Browning, inviting you to join me for more Indigenous art and culture next Saturday evening after the 6 o'clock news. Don't forget, you can listen to streaming audio, or you can download the podcast from our website. That's abc.net.au/rn/away, and that's AWAYE. Keep safe, and I'll catch you next week.